And we'll just begin with verse 1. And I saw another mighty angel come down from heaven, clothed with a cloud, and a rainbow was upon his head. And his face, as it were, was as it were the sun, and his feet as pillars of fire. Now, this angel, this called an angel here, there's some controversy with regard to who this actually is. First, I draw your attention to the definition of the word angel. The original Greek is angelos, and it can mean a pastor, it can mean an angelic being, or it can mean a messenger from God. And I personally feel that this angel has to be Christ, although there are other people who feel that it is an actual angel. Now, the good news is, no matter where you fall in what you believe, the person itself has little to do with this chapter. It's really the book that's in his hand. But I believe that it's Christ, and I'll share with you why I believe that as we move through the chapter. So I'll be teaching it as though it's Christ. I saw another mighty angel, or Christ, come down from heaven, clothed with a cloud, and a rainbow was upon his head. Now, remember, he's coming for judgment. We're in the tribulation period, but he has a rainbow on his head. And if you remember, the rainbow was first seen in the Bible after the flood. It was the promise of God to be merciful to man and not destroy the earth with flood again. So that promise still stands. He comes with the rainbow on his head, and his face was as it were the sun. Simply meaning that the radiance, the strength of his face, it's almost like when you look at the sun on a clear day and you can't look at it because it's too overpowering. That's the strength of his face, that it's just so overpowering, it's difficult to look at him. And his feet are as pillars of fire. So the rainbow on his head speaks of his mercy and his grace, and the feet as pillars of fire speak of his judgment. He's coming to execute judgment. And he had in his hand a little book, and he set his right foot upon the sea and his left foot upon the earth. So this little book that we see now in chapter 10, the last time we saw this little book was in chapter 5. If you remember that no one was worthy to take the little book out of the Father's hand. Only the Lamb. Jesus was the only one worthy. He took the book. It had 7 seals on it. He opened all 7 of the seals. So now the little book is open. And now we see Jesus here again in the 10th chapter with the open book in his hand. And he sets his right foot upon the sea and his left foot upon the earth. Now this is, there's only, I think, 11 verses in this chapter. He's going to use this phrase 3 times within 11 verses, so that means that it is significant that he puts one foot on the land and one foot on the sea. It conjures up in your mind a stature of aggression. It's like he's bold in how he's standing. And ultimately, what it really means is that I come to claim this earth. It's mine, both land and sea. All of it belongs to me. And we'll see Christ. Now he descends from heaven. And we'll see in chapter 13, the Antichrist is going to ascend from the sea. So you see this confrontation getting ready to happen between the Lord of hosts and the man called Antichrist. But his stature is such, his stance is such, that he's claiming both land and sea all belong to him. And we'll see this, as I said, 3 times in 11 verses, his claim. Now, if you turn to Deuteronomy chapter 11, we'll see that the stance it makes sense, because here's what God told Moses, Deuteronomy 11:24. He said, every place whereon the sole of thy foot shall tread shall be yours. So he told Moses, wherever you put your foot, I'm going to give it to you. And that has the same connotation here with Christ. He puts one foot on the land, it's mine. He puts his other foot on the sea, it's mine. The earth and the fullness thereof, it all belongs to him, and he has come to claim it. And he cried with a loud voice, as when a lion roareth. And when he had cried, seven thunders uttered their voices. And when the seven thunders had uttered their voices, I was about to write, and I heard a voice from heaven saying unto me, seal up those things which the seven thunders uttered, and write them not. So he cries with a loud voice as the lion of the tribe of Judah. He roars out, and then there are seven thunders that utter their voice from heaven. And John says, I was about to write, and then he hears the voice saying, seal it up. Now, this tells us something about the vision that John is having. It's not like he had a vision, then he went home and wrote down everything he remembers. It means that he was writing things down as the vision was playing out in front of him. That means the vision was not 1 or 2 or 4 minutes long. That means the vision was as long as the book of Revelation, and he's writing it down in real time as the vision is playing out. I mean, that's a real vision, isn't it? That's not a dream like you remember the next morning. That's like a real vision. And so he's about to write what the seven thunders uttered. It means that the voice of these seven thunders, it wasn't just the sound of a thunder. They spoke something, and John understood what they said. He fully understood the utterance of the seven thunders. And the voice tells him from heaven, says, seal up those things which the seven thunders uttered, and write them not. How many want to know what the seven thunders uttered? Yeah, me too. But God says, seal it up, and nobody can tell you what it is, because it was sealed up. And not only did John not write it, but every indication is he never told anybody. He lived another, I don't know, 5 or 10 years, maybe even 15, after he got off of Patmos, he never told anybody. What if God told you and I to seal up something? Could we be as faithful to seal it up? That's maturity as a Christian. That's maturity that you can just seal it up and be responsible with it. And the angel which I saw, here it is, number two, stand on the sea and upon the earth, lifted up his hand to heaven, and swear by him that liveth forever and ever, who created the heaven and the things that therein are, and the earth and the things that therein are, and the sea and the things that therein are, that there should be time no longer. Now, here's one of the reasons I believe that this angel has to be Christ. There is nowhere in the Bible that an angel swears by God. It's simply not there. But there is places in the Bible where God swears by himself. And so for this to be an actual angelic being and not be Christ, somehow we have to figure out, it would be the only place in the Bible that we find an angel swearing by him that sits on the throne. And for that reason, at least for that reason, I think that it is Christ. Nevertheless, what is sworn is that there shall be time no longer. Now, some people read this and they mistakenly think that God is going to do away with the concept of time. Like there's no more hours, days, we all go out into an endless eternity. But that cannot be the case. The next verse just knocks that in the head. That cannot possibly be the case. But what he's saying is that there'll be no more delay. You know, things have been delayed for thousands of years. Things that the prophets have spoken for thousands of years. And now Christ is saying there should be time, no delay, no longer any delay. Verse 7, but in the days of the voice of the seventh trump, when he shall begin to sound, the mystery of God should be finished, as he hath declared to his servants, the prophets. And so this is how we know that when he said there'll be time no more, he wasn't talking about doing away with the concept of time, because the very next verse says, in the days of the voice of the seventh trump. Well, days is the measurement of time. And so we know that time is going to go on, but rather that the delay, God is about to fully unveil the mystery of God. And there's probably many things that are contained in that, the mystery of God, but there are two that come to my mind immediately. All of us, though we're saved, we're adopted into the family of God. We love him, and we know that he loves us. Still, God is somewhat mysterious to all of us. I don't care how close you walk with him. There's a good degree of unknowableness as it relates to God. And so God has said that that's going to be finished. That's going to be ended. And remember, as we move through the millennial age, as we move into the golden age, after the 1,000-year reign of Christ into the golden age, God is going to send a city down to this planet called the New Jerusalem, a massive city. And he is going to tabernacle, God the Father is going to tabernacle with men, and Christ is going to be the light of that city. They're going to be in that city with the redeemed church of the living God. That means to me that heaven, wherever heaven is now, is no longer heaven. That heaven comes to this planet, and that's where God and that's where Christ dwell with the redeemed church. So from that regard, the mystery of God is finished. We don't know God the way that Adam knew God before the fall. He walked with him in the cool of the day. They had intimate fellowship. God taught Adam so many things about the creation that you and I, because of the fall, we don't have that closeness. Many things are a mystery to us. So that's one aspect of the mystery of God that will be finished. But here's another aspect. It is a mystery to me, and I'm sure to you as well, why did God let the devil have so much time to steal, kill, and destroy? Have you ever wondered that? I have a young lady I've been praying for years now who is bedridden. Just a young lady, beautiful young lady, bedridden, can't get out of the bed. It just goes from worse to worse to worse. And this is a person who loves God supremely. And I just wonder, I say, God, I don't understand this. I don't understand how this person can be getting so devastated and there's nothing that can be done about it. Well, that mystery will be revealed. He'll show us, we'll understand all those little things like that we wonder in our mind, how could this be? How could God let that happen? The mystery will be revealed. He'll open it up and we'll see that his wisdom was supreme in the way that he did things. So there should be time no longer. The mystery of God should be finished as he hath declared to his servants, the prophets. So it means that all prophetic utterances down through the years that have not been fulfilled are now going to be fulfilled. There's no more delay. And the voice which I heard from heaven spake unto me and said, go and take the little book which is open in the hand of the angel which standeth upon the sea and upon the earth. So there's the third time you see that phrase talking about the position, the posture of this angel. Go and take the little book which is open in the hand of the angel. Now, again, this is the little book that we saw when we first got into the book of Revelation, I think chapter 4 and 5, that had the seven seals that Jesus opened up. This is the little book. And I went unto the angel and said unto him, give me the little book. And he said unto me, take it, eat it up, and it shall make thy belly bitter, and it shall be in thy mouth sweet as honey. So this is just the word of God. This is just the message of God. This is the fulfillment of the gospel that's in this little book. And here is a reality about the gospel that is almost lost in modern Christianity. The gospel has a dual nature. When it is properly